The following is this week's recording of our live streams, which take place on Discord. We call these meetings kinship because we realize that the deepest mutuality is not one of biography or biology, but one of ideas. And this is a time for us to discuss the most edifying ideas that come to mind. You can join the Discord community to meet and interact with like-minded people via the link in the description. I hope you will enjoy the following discussions.
So recently I've been encountering one of Emerson's quotes, which was really thought-provoking, and I would like to hear your thoughts about it. And he basically says something along these lines, that it is so bad then to be misunderstood. Socrates and Jesus and Luther and Galilei and Newton and every pure and wise spirit that ever took flesh to be great is to be misunderstood. And the thought that I had in mind was that, why is it that when we encounter greatness so beyond our comprehension, the first thing we conclude is something different than the universal truth? Although we share the same mind, we are the same in nature as it is reason.
I remember that quote too from Emerson. It's interesting.
I've been thinking about it for a couple of months, mm-hmm. actually, and I've been thinking about asking it or not, because I didn't want it to waste anybody's time. So I came to the conclusion onto asking it, because why not?
Of course. But what's your question about it exactly? Maybe I didn't catch that.
Why is it that we misunderstood great ideas?
How?
Sometimes. Although we are same in reason and in nature.
That's a very good question. And it's one of those questions where you could talk about it for literally ever. I mean, and that's something that we see in Emerson all the time, right? He says something and you're like, wow, I don't even know what to do with that, right? It makes you think of so many things and it takes you so many places. And that's what he's really good at. He gets at the heart of things. And then on top of that has this amazing skill of this poetic language, right? So it's a combination mm-hmm. of truth and beauty, his writings. And if anyone here has not yet read Emerson, I'm sure you too would highly recommend that they do that, right? Because it's so amazing. And this quote, you're right, it goes on a little bit, but essentially what it says is, to be great is to be misunderstood.
Yes.
And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, actually, that to be great is, like, to be great equals to be misunderstood. I think it happens every single time with every person who truly has an honest, true, fundamental, universal, timeless idea. It's true. Every single time there's someone or an entire population of people who misunderstand that. It's true. But I'm not sure if it's inherent, but that has to be the case. Mm-hmm. But yes, you're absolutely right. And I think why that is because it literally goes against everything we've been taught. Every great idea goes against everything we've ever been taught, because we've been taught wrong. And if that's not apparent to anyone, just think about, I was thinking about this the other day. I was watching something about Japan, which I do a lot. I like those. There's a show called Japanology. It's like every week it's a different thing about. Do you know it?
Hmm. No. I just watch a lot of vlogs about Japan. I like it too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So every week they talk about something else that's like supposed to be uniquely Japanese, right? And but somewhere else, some other type of show like that, I saw something about kindergartens in Japan. And they were talking about how children or the parents already start thinking about college when the child is at kindergarten age. So they try to get the children into the best kindergarten, which will then lead them to get into the best elementary school and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I remembered from my own sort of childhood, because I grew up in Turkey, and there it's very similar to how it is in Japan, where you, at a very young age, the parents start thinking about college education and then the job that that would lead to, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a culture of literally putting 10-year-olds in a school and already thinking, this will lead to this and this will lead to this. And I was...
I can relate to that, actually.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like that in a lot of countries. I think people from, for example, China tell me that a lot too. Things like that. And I was just thinking about the other day, why did no one tell me as a child that that didn't matter? That it doesn't matter what, certainly doesn't matter what elementary school you go into, but what high school you go into, what university you end up going into, what degree you get, and then what job you get as a result. Why did no one tell me that that doesn't matter? All of society.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe they don't know any better. They just saw the pattern and followed
That's
it.
Fact. That's fact. Absolutely. You're right. And I always say that we were taught wrong does not mean that people did it on purpose. Our parents did certainly not try to set us up wrong. And our teachers didn't either. And all of society did not either. There's not a single person in your entire life that you've ever met who did not do the best that they could for you. It's true. Society is doing its best. Okay. The voters are trying to do their best. And even most of the politicians are trying to do their best. Are they really doing their best? I don't think so. Right. But there isn't this, what we often like to think as and what we often like to put all responsibility onto, that everything in our life that didn't turn out the way that we, for whatever reason, wanted it to be, we keep saying society, we keep saying our parents, we keep saying the government, right? Or the judicial system, or the police, or whatever it is, right? But everyone's trying to do their best, and they just don't know any better. And we don't know any better, and we did not know any better. And so when there's an idea, such as the idea that I will get into today later on, because it relates to the new question of the week. For example, when I often say that there is no evil, right? For example, that's a great idea, right? That comes from, I've learned it from Socrates and have since seen it in others, of course. It's not a new idea by any means, but it is one of those ideas, right? One of those great ideas. And Socrates was misunderstood to the point that he was essentially executed for this very idea that evil does not exist. Because people like to blame something. And if they can say that there's evil in the world, well, then that's the source of all that is bad. And all the good that was prevented.
Can I ask you something in the middle of this? Why do we like to blame?
Well, because we like to understand. We're creatures of reason. That's what's unique about us, right? Other animals don't have this kind of abstract thinking that we're able to have, right? We can literally think about the universe, the planets that we've never even seen with our own eyes, right? And we can think about concepts like justice and goodness and beauty and art, whatever it is. And we want to understand everything, not only in science, but in our daily lives. And so when we see things going wrong, so to speak, what we judge and deem as wrong, we want to know the reason for that. And where the responsibility lies and just what happened there. And so we like to see that there are just some evil people in the world. We say that we don't like it. We say that we don't want evil in the world, but it is very convenient for us also at the same time to be able to say, well, it's just an evil person. Of course they did that. And of course they took that from me, or of course they never gave that to me. Things like that. So when someone comes around and says there is no evil, and says, like Socrates said, that no one does wrong willingly, that it's always out of ignorance, and that no one can harm another, that only one can harm oneself, that really offends people. And it offends them because they misunderstand it. Every single time I say in a video that there is no evil and that everyone's doing their best and that everything done wrong is done wrong out of ignorance, not true understanding. People say, oh, okay, yeah, let's just let all those people who killed someone, let them free. Or war is okay, or children starving is okay. No one ever said that's okay. No one ever said that because someone does violence to someone out of ignorance that they're now all of a sudden not responsible for their actions. And I even, every time I say that, I even explain that. I say, I know what you're going to say. This does not mean that they're not responsible. There's nothing changes about the law. Nothing changes about consequences. Nothing changes about responsibility. But can't you see that this person is ignorant instead of this intelligent, aware, and willing actor? You know, that's the only difference. It takes you from hate to love, because no one who's ignorant, no one who does wrong unwillingly and unknowingly so many times even, is someone who can provoke your anger. If anything, it would provoke your pity. And to be away from anger, away from hate in this way through this realization is the best thing you can do for yourself. You are not relieving anyone else of their responsibility. The worst thing in the world is to be a violent person, right? Your judgment of that, or even a prison sentence that comes from that act, is the least of the punishment that a violent person incurs. First of all, they've destroyed themselves. As soon as they did something violent, as soon as they did something unjust, as soon as they lied, cheated, deceived, they became cheaters. They became deceivers. They became people who are not with truth anymore, who are in the domain of hate, in the domain of deception, in the domain of having injured themselves. No one wants to live with hate. No one wants to live with anger and confusion. But that's exactly what people are who do wrong. They are confused, conflicted, angry, afraid people. They're all so afraid. And so the biggest punishment, if you will, to be a violent person, to be a lying person, to be an unfair person, whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to call evil, right? The worst punishment for that is being in that condition. There's nothing worse than that. So just realizing that does not mean that it makes it okay. It does not mean that, oh, okay, so because they're a thief, they made themselves a thief. And yeah, it is terrible to have made oneself a thief. But so should we not put them in prison anymore? No, of course, go ahead and put them in prison. But that's what I'm saying. It's the least of it. To them, what they have done to themselves by stealing something, by killing someone, by whatever they did that we generally call evil, that's the least of their problems. It's the least of their worries. It's the least of the things that has been done to them by themselves. And so, when you properly understand what Socrates was talking about, which is the same thing that Jesus was talking about, Buddha was talking about, Muhammad was talking about, pretty much all the philosophers behind me in the bookshelf have talked about, there's nothing to get offended there. it's a relief, it's freedom, it's understanding, right? Because like we talked about last week, to respond to ignorance with anger is ignorance. So when we respond to so-called evil with anger, with hate, because it's evil, evil is to be hated. No one loves evil. Everyone who believes in evil hates evil. And everyone who hates something is a hateful person. Does it get any more obvious than that? And any hateful person is literally having a terrible time. I mean, our existence on Earth comes down to this, if we're having a good time or a terrible time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who's hateful, who's within hate, who has anger, is almost literally burning. Because anger feels like it makes you hot, it makes you sweat, right? People who are angry take their clothes off. They feel like they're contained by something. They feel super contained. And they get so red hot, right? So they're literally almost burning. And so that to me sounds like hell. In hell, you burn. And so anger is hell. Hate is hell. And everyone who believes in the idea of evil is in hell and is properly burning. And so when someone says there is no evil, there is nothing to get offended by at all. But this is exactly what Emerson is talking about. This is a great idea, because every great idea is truth, it's of goodness, but it's also a freeing idea. It literally elevates you, it exalts you, it shows you that all that was in your way was yourself. Not other people, not what they did, not what you did in the past, not what you think you have to do in the future. All of that is just you put there by you. No one else did that to you. Society didn't do that to you. Your parents didn't do that to you. People you knew in the past didn't do that to you. You did that. And that's good news. Because if you did that, you can also undo it right now. And so when a friend such as Socrates, Plato, comes around and says, no one can harm another, one can only harm oneself, then that means all harm was coming from you, meaning all good can also come from you. So when people misunderstand that and say, oh, so all people who do violence, who do war, who kill children, literally, that's fine for them to do. It's okay. They can't harm them. How are they not harming them? They're harming them right now. And so that's how they misunderstand it and get offended. So it literally does the opposite for them. When it's supposed to free them, it makes them even angrier. Or rather, it becomes the occasion of their anger for that day. Because angry people are angry all the time about something.
Exactly.
And so that's exactly the misunderstanding that Emerson was talking about, right? And so there you go. This is, I think, why, in Emerson's words, to be great is to be misunderstood. If you have this understanding of evil, and again, this is just an example, there are so many, but this is a real life example. If, for example, you have this understanding of evil, then you are great. You are great because by your own admission, you were suffering before. You were looking at the world as evil, as bad, and there's so many bad things happening, and life is hardly worth living, and the universe is just chaos, and it's an accident, and it's misery. Does that sound like a great mode of being? It sounds like a miserable painful mode of being. There's nothing great about it. So being great is to let go of these things. And so that's why every to be great is to be misunderstood. It's so true. And so I hope that answers your question a little bit. I think you knew all of this already, though.
I wanted to ask you, how can we prevent misunderstanding in such ideas? Is there a tool to examine it? Is there a way to think about it in a different way?
I think you can do many things to prevent sort of the peripheral misunderstandings, like the way you word it, right? For example, that's why I don't use any jargon, which in my mind includes words that are sort of in fashion these days.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a judgment of good and bad. It's just that when we use the same words or the same expressions, rather, all the meanings that other people put on it, we assume that that person has. So whenever someone, for example, just random example that comes into my head right now is toxic, this or that, right? People talk mm-hmm. of toxic so-and-so. And whenever someone says that, let's say toxic, what do people say?
Toxic behavior.
Yeah, toxic behavior. So when someone says, I don't want this toxic behavior in this workplace, whatever. Everyone who hears that immediately gets triggered by all the other times and the other people that that word has been used or that expression has been used. And so to put all mm-hmm. their political beliefs, all the people's personalities and what they think about them of the past people they heard that expression used by, they put it all in the person who's saying it now. And so that's why I don't like using terms like that, because we use words to communicate. And then when we use words like that, that are have become so loaded, good or bad, doesn't matter, then it literally gets in the way of communicating. And so that's something I find very helpful, to never use a term, never use terminology, never use jargon. Always explain what you're saying in standard, simple words. Right? The only word I mm-hmm. used about evil was evil. That's it. You know, I didn't mention any kind of ism or this or that, because we always want to talk of what is evil. And I always say evil is ignorance, right? And evil is hate. And so these are fundamental basic words. It's not jargon. It's not anything that's loaded. So that helps. But I don't think you can ever prevent anyone misunderstanding you, because people want to misunderstand.
That too, but mainly I ask that for ourselves, since we pursue these universal truth.
Well, the only thing you can do within yourself is to just examine every single belief and opinion that you have. When you say, again, about evil, let's say, this is what I think about evil, whatever it may be. Don't just assume that. Say, well, that's what I believe, so then that means this. Well, hold on, let me first examine that again, if I haven't done so in a while, right? So every single thing, it's, I always compare it to, you have a room full of stuff, and you want to see what of it you can get rid of, right? You can't just assume, oh, this pile of stuff is fine, so I'm going to look at the other stuff. No, look at every object in the room. And you will find a lot of objects in that pile that you assumed was fine, necessary, should be there, needs to be there. You'll find a lot of objects in it, actually, that can go. And so that's the very best thing we can do for ourselves. And again, Socrates said, right, an unexamined life is a life not worth living. And so that's what we need to do. Everything we hear, and first of all, this is my general rule about whenever we get offended, we are wrong. Whenever we get offended, we are wrong. We are never right when we get offended. Even if we are right in holding the opposite belief or whatever offends us, to get offended is wrong. Because to discern an idea as right or wrong, you don't need to get offended. You just use your reason, your logic, as a human being, and resentment, offense, anger, hate has to have nothing to do with it. It's not a part of the process. So whenever we get offended, we are wrong. And so that's why I like to, is in certain ways, I like to get offended, because whenever I do get offended, something to work on, and that it's an opportunity for me to eradicate yet another thing that stands in between me and peace. And so I say, okay, that just offended me. Why did that offend me? Was it the idea itself that is so wrong that it offended me? And then I can look into the idea and say, ah, interesting. Yeah, that idea is wrong. I cannot accept that. But why did I get offended? And then I realize that whether the idea was right or wrong, my offense towards it is a separate issue that is completely a me problem. It has nothing to do with the issue itself or the person who said it or the time or place it was said in. And I realized that there was maybe an identity within me that triggered that, because that statement, again, whether it was true, right, or wrong, it triggered something that I identify with. It was attacking something that I had attached myself to, right? For example, if, you know, I'm not a sports fan, but if someone said something negative about the sports team that you like and you get offended by that, you are wrong. Whether what they're saying is right or wrong, whether they say, oh, this person who plays on the team that you like is a terrible player. And then even if you could say, well, you don't know what you're talking about because that player left 2 years ago, so you're wrong. Even if you can say that, if you are offended by that statement, nevertheless, you are wrong. So that's a separate issue. It means you are identifying as being a supporter, a fan of that team. And to be identified, to be attached to something that you are not in control of, that is literally not you. I mean, why would you identify with something that's not you, whether it's in your control or not? It doesn't matter. If you are identifying with something that is not you, everything that can attack it can attack you. And so in that sense, whenever we are offended, we are wrong. And so that's the best thing you can do for yourself, is to, you know, there's misunderstanding and misunderstanding, but most of the time when we misunderstand something, we are also angered by it. And so, as always, anger is an excellent indicator that we have work to do on ourselves.
For sure.
Yeah. And so whenever we hear an idea, whether we like it or not, and we feel something like that towards it, we can know we are wrong. And so we can take it as an opportunity to learn from it, to grow, to see why this is being caused and what we can do to better ourselves. Or we can ignore it like most people do, say something nasty to the person who said it, maybe in a comment or whatever, and then just leave. And do the same thing all over again if we ever hear it again. We can choose to do that, which most people do. Or we can choose to respectfully listen to something, notice the offense or the anger or the pride. It also works like that. When we hear an idea spoken that we agree with and we like it, we get a joy that someone else is saying, or we're proud of that fact, then we are wrong too. Because that's also an indicator that we're identifying with something that has nothing to do with us, some idea, some external thing. And we get a thrill out of the fact that someone else believes it too. We feel that we're backed up. We feel that we're part of some group. And so that's wrong too. So it's such a valuable thing to be offended, to misunderstand something, and to not just get angry, lash out, and leave about it. If you can do that, I think that's the best thing you can do for yourself. To be offended and to sit with it, to not run away with it, and to dissect it. Not have the other person dissect it for you, or not dissect them to dissect it, but dissect yourself, your own beliefs, by yourself, within yourself, for yourself. It's something to be thankful for, to the person who has caused the offense. Because without that incident, without that person, you would not have known that there is something out there that can offend you. You would not have known that there is something that you're clearly identifying with, although you were unaware that you were identifying with it. And so this anger, this resentment, this offense is pointing that out to you. Very valuable. Very valuable. That's what we thank friends for when they do that, when they point something out that was a contradiction or a conflict within us. We say, oh, thank you so much for showing that. I had no idea. I was walking around being ignorant about this. And so why do we lash out at people? Why are we so nasty to people who are doing the same exact thing, but we don't thank them just because we are offended? A me problem becomes a reason why we treat other people in the way that they treat others, which we condemn them for. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. Ryan. I think also it rises from ego too. That ego wants to win everything and anything.
Exactly. Because ego's identity, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because ego's identity, and the ego identifies with winning arguments, being an argument winner, being always right, being competent, being a person who knows better, being a person who doesn't need anyone else, being a person who gives advice, not asks for advice. That's often an identity that the ego has and that we have. And so,
for sure,
ego's identity. Yeah.
Thanks for the response.
Of course. Anything else?
No, that was all.
Did you have a response to the question of the week?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well, it's the last.
I hope I'm not late.
We have that section in the Discord community here for the question of the week. You can always respond there. But this meeting, this kinship meeting, is the last one for that particular question. The question being, do you have any problems?
Can I answer it now?
Yeah.
I think I used to have when I was inflicting problems upon myself, thinking that this sort of conflict justifies this action. But truly thinking about that, no, I don't think I have. And I'm trying to not have any, which needs practice, I think.
But isn't that an amazing realization that you don't have any problems?
It is.
Because most people, almost all people, for almost all of their lives, think that they have problems. The problems keep changing, right? It's like they solve one thing and then another comes along, or
what's
for
next?
A period, one doesn't come along, but eventually it always does. So always they have problems, something. And they think that if they solve them quick enough, or if they get good enough at solving problems, someday they won't have any problems. But until then, they will just have to deal with it and solve one problem after another, not realizing that it's the ego, which is themselves, who looks for problems. And if you look for problems, you're going to find problems, right?
So why do you think the ego looks for problems?
Because the ego needs drama. The ego is opposite of peace, right? Peace is the absence of drama. Peace is the absence of problems. In peace, you can just sit and nothing's happening. There's nothing to fight. There's nothing to overcome. There's no one who's threatening anything, or nothing that's threatening anything. Everything's okay, right? In the present moment, everything is always okay. But if you ever get to that state, you realize that you don't need anything because everything's okay, right? So you don't need anything, meaning you don't need identities. You don't need other people's validation. You don't need more money than you can spend. You don't need to be regarded as a certain type of person by others, right? But that also means you don't need the ego.
And so you think we can completely detach ourselves from ego? Rid ourselves from ego?
You are not attached to it now.
Do you think that's possible?
You are the one holding on to it. We are the one holding on to it. We're never one with the ego anyway. If we were one with the ego, meaning if we were the ego, you couldn't detach from any of it. It would be you. I mean, it would be like killing yourself spiritually, right? You wouldn't be able to do it. But the only reason that the ego is there at all is because it's a separate entity that, that we are hanging on to. And so, I mean, just tell me this, and this is always the perfect example, and I could talk forever, but this will show you immediately, in my opinion. Don't you ever watch the news and or something like that, and you see two people arguing about nothing? I mean, literally nothing. They're just arguing, and they're getting really heated, and they've built their entire careers around it. They're so-called experts or whatever they are, right? And they're literally arguing about something that you could not care less about. And you think, wow, this is so embarrassing. You know, like you feel embarrassed for them that they care about something that is so unimportant and not even real. Right? Do you ever get that feeling?
Yeah. I just think what a waste of time it is.
Exactly. That's you, though, about something else.
Yes, indeed.
And when I say you, I mean all of us. We all had and still have something that we care about, like those people who endlessly argue on the news and who swear at each other and who go to bed and can't even sleep because they're so angry. That's us about some other illusion, some other unimportant thing, some other thing that doesn't even exist. And so when you ask me if we can ever truly detach from the ego, I always think about that. It's not even something that we should attach ourselves in the first place. And once others are doing it, we can see it so clearly, and it's so silly to us, and it's so obvious to us.
I meant detaching.
Say that again.
Not attaching. Detaching.
No, I know. Yeah, I know.
Detaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you would never attach yourself in the first place to those things that you see other people attaching themselves to. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you've done the same thing about other things.
For sure.
So detaching, when you see it in others, is so easy. It's only difficult for us because we care about the particular thing that we have attached ourselves to, which we should have never done. And so that's how it is so easy if you think about it, but it seems so difficult. It's just an illusion. And what the ego has to make that illusion seem so real is fear. That's all it has. Because it makes it look like this thing that you care about is you. And it's so important that if you would let go of it, you would disappear. Because it makes you think as an illusion that you are that thing. So if you let go of that thing, you'd be letting go of yourself, of your own existence, of your own being, and you would just disappear all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like sometimes, right? When we see that something is an identity, and we say, well, I guess I should let go of it then. And then that fear comes in, right? Because the ego then perceives the danger of you understanding certain things and you're seeing certain things, and it doesn't want that. And so it comes in with the fear and says, but if you let go of that, that's you. Are you really sure that that's not you? What if you let go of it and you realize it was you all along and then you disappear? That's the one tool that the ego has. And
indeed.
But fear is an illusion, right? So step one is to see it in others. And I think that really goes along with what we were talking about in the first place, how to be great is to be misunderstood, right? Because those great people are the ones who challenge us on these things that we thought were so obvious and are so important to us. And so we throw everything we can at that person and we intentionally misunderstand them so that we don't have to deal with the real issue, right? I think that's a stage mm-hmm. of the whole process. I think anger comes first, misunderstanding comes after that. And then you sort of realize that some of the things you misunderstood. And then it slowly maybe starts making sense if you make the time and space to really think about these things, which again, most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense?
It does.
What an amazing realization to have that you don't have any problems. I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
I don't think so.
Don't forget it, right? This is what I always say. This is philosophy.
Yeah. It's a practice, to be honest.
It's practice. And yeah, you just have to remind yourself. And that's what our friends are for, you know. For example, Socrates is a great reminder of this fact. And so we just need to be with our friends and not so much with people who are not acting like friends. Like we said before, a true friend is someone who reminds us of these things. And everyone who's not a true friend is someone who makes us forget.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I titled a video or a kinship with this exact sentence too: don't call anyone a friend who makes you forget. We need to be around people and around any kind of input, right? Whether it's a movie, TV show, music, books, whatever it is, they need to be things that remind you, not things that make you forget. And if you put yourself in this kind of environment, in an environment conducive to remembering, rather than an environment conducive to forgetting, you can't go wrong. You will be ignorant about a lot of things and you will purposefully misunderstand, but it will be all part of the process. It won't let go of you, right? And you'll just go through that and eventually come out of it.
Hopefully.
Yeah, no, it's for real. I mean, you're already seeing that you don't have any problems. So now when someone comes around and says, you have a problem, hey, look at me, you have a problem, right? This is going on. You have a problem here. You need to deal with this. Okay, you need to give me attention. You will now be able to immediately see, hold on, I know I don't have any problems and you don't have the right to tell me that I have a problem. There might be a challenge at work, something, an issue that needs to be dealt with, and we'll go through it logically and reasonably, but don't come here with your drama. Don't come here with your anger and nervous energy, so to speak, and try to put that on me. I'm not taking it, right? That's what will automatically happen. I think, you know, just from talking to you, I think you would say that, and you would not be able to help yourself but to say that, actually. And so the process has already begun. And this knowledge, as long as you stick with it, you cannot unlearn it. You cannot unsee it. And so it'll be easy.
It will be easy, to be honest.
It is. It is. And that's what I'm saying. Like, what do we need anything other than this? Yeah. I mean, all entertainment, all music, what is it? How is it better than just sitting with this, right? Just to sit with the fact, wow, I don't have any problems. And not that this matters, but no one else has any problems either if they could just see that. And what an amazing world we live in all of a sudden, even though it was like that all the time, we just couldn't see it. Wow, a world in which problems don't exist. Literally, what's better than that?
I don't think anything can top that, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what we're after here.
Thinking that you have nothing in mind to be nervous about. Yeah, it is.
And that goes for you, too. You started this conversation saying, I'm a little nervous.
Yes.
Do you see now how that's not even a thing, how that's just an illusion and that you don't have any
It
problems
is.
whatsoever?
It is. Somehow, when I want to start talking, it always is the hardest thing to do. And the nervousness is kind of choking. But at the end, it's kind of settles down
And you see
and
it
goes
when
by.
you do it, that it's an illusion. And so the more you show yourself that fear is an illusion, nervousness is nothing other than fear, right? So the
Yes.
more you show yourself that fear is just an illusion, the more you will see that it's just an illusion, and an illusion cannot delude you anymore because you literally know it's fake. How can something, it's sort of like going to a theater and thinking it's real. You would never think that what's happening is real. You always know it's an illusion. It's just a play, right? And so that's how fear can be eradicated, for example. And thank you for speaking here, despite the fact that you were nervous, despite the fact that you had that going against you, and you just did it anyway. That's literally the best thing you can do for yourself. And
And thank you for your time and response. Yeah, because I also think that this nervousness needs to be nurtured or to be put in practice, like the
absolutely.
things we talked about right now.
Absolutely. And thank you
So I don't
for
wish to take
yes.
any more time because I think people are raising their hands too.
No, that's
And
okay.
I'm
I
in the
mean,
other
we
side of
always
the globe
say,
because nearing my bedtime too, I might leave. So I
No,
will
you
look
should.
forward to the recorded version of this kinship.
Absolutely. Thank you for making us think of Emerson as well, and thank you for the great discussion, and thank you for responding to the question of the week. I think that was all very, very valuable to everyone, and thank you for your time also. I'll move you back to the
Thank you,
audience.
sir.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
And if you have to leave, you have to leave, of course. That's why we have the recordings. And thank you very much. That was so valuable. And I will invite our next speaker.
Hi, Mr. Atici. First, I wanted to thank you for everything that you do. Little. Thank you very much. So, in regards to last week's question, I was wondering if you could help us. You know how we all want to be open and trusting when it comes to friendship, but there is always that fear that we will disappoint people and that friendships will end. And that pain and loss will ensue. So, how can we free ourselves from that fear of abandonment that overshadows the attempt to engage in solid friendships?
Well, there's a lot in what you said. So, first of all, how can one person abandon another?
For example, and it's not a real abandonment, but it shows maybe an old wound. You then feel not good enough or not worthy.
Yeah, but when you imagine that you have a friendship right now, and when you imagine that that person would abandon you, what does that look like? How can they abandon you, or how could you abandon someone else, do you think?
By not being friends with them anymore, just by cutting the bond. Yeah.
And so do you think someone not wanting to be friends with you anymore is a loss to you?
Yes, it would be a loss to me. It would not be a loss to them, but it would be a loss to me.
Why would it be a loss to you think?
Because friends are rare, so if I don't know if another person leaves you, it's the confirmation that you're not worthy of it, that you're not worthy of people staying in your life. Yeah.
And so you think other people have the right to judge your life and how worthy it is?
I think so, yeah, because the outside world is a mirror of what we of our work. So I think that if they say that we are not worthy, then it means it must be true. Otherwise, they wouldn't act like that. They wouldn't be friendship. It means they saw something that was flawed and unlovable. So therefore, they did what was right. They left. Yeah.
Interesting. So if I came to your house and I threw a bunch of garbage in your front yard in front of your door, and other people walked by later and saw all that trash in front of you, and they thought that you were the person who put that there, who lives in trash and who doesn't care about cleanliness, does that make it true?
Their point of view matters more than my point of view. Yes.
Does their point of view matter more than the truth?
It's their truth. Mine is not. And in a way, I start to believe them, so it will become my truth.
Is their truth bigger than truth?
If it's a truth that is generalized and that comes often, it means it's a truth about you. It might not be the truth from, but it's their truth and they are majority, so it means it's true.
So, but in the specific case that I gave you where I dumped all that trash, truth is, reality is that's what happened. I did that. It wasn't you. Is that correct?
You did that to me, so it means there was something I said or did that deserved that.
No, it didn't deserve it. I did it so that other people think that about you. And I don't even know you. I'm just doing that for fun. I'm going around the neighborhood and putting trash in front of people's doors just as a prank to people I don't even know. Did I do that then? Did I put the trash in front of your door, or did you put the trash in front of your door?
If you don't know me and you did, it doesn't matter. But if you know me, you did.
No, okay. I'm trying to establish one thing here. So, like I said, I don't know you, and I just did that as a prank. I did it to 10 other people too, totally random. So truth is not my truth, not your truth, not someone else's truth, not 9 billion other truths, but the truth, capital T, what in fact happened, what has occurred in reality, is that I put that trash in front of your door to make it look like you are a person who lives in trash. Is that true?
Would be true. Yes.
Okay, so hold on to that thought. Okay, this is fact. Truth is that I put that trash there, no matter what anyone else thinks. Okay. So now someone else comes along and think that you are a person whose house is full of trash, and so it's spilling out of the house, right? That's how much trash there is in the house. They think that is, and you call that their truth. Okay, and that's okay. You call that their truth. Is their truth truer than the truth?
You're saying, no, it's not.
I mean, what are you saying? When you know the truth and someone else's so-called truth contradicts with the truth, what do you think is more important, the truth or their truth?
Truth matters, not their truth. I understand what you're saying.
So then how is the world, meaning other people's truths, their individual truths, how is the world a mirror of you?
They send back to me, so it means there's something that makes them send that back to me. They wouldn't know how to explain this because of me. Because
it wasn't because of you, though, in this case that we laid out, right? It was because of me that they thought that you were a person who lives in trash. So do you see how the so-called mirror can be manipulated?
Yes, it can be manipulated.
So which one are you going to care about? The truth, so-called truth, the mirror that can be manipulated, or the truth, reality, that which actually is true?
Reality.
So then why do you think that someone else's opinion, someone who looks at that so-called mirror, which can be manipulated, and makes their judgments, their decisions to be a friend to you or to be not a friend to you based on that, why do you think that reflects on you?
Because I agree with their opinion of me. I agree with them.
Do you see now that you are not agreeing with them because they are of truth, but simply because you agree with their particular opinion?
It has become my truth too. Their opinion. It's like they shaped me. Oh.
You just said yourself that you only think of other people's opinions as valid because you agree with them. If you didn't agree with them, you wouldn't care about them. And you also just said that they shape their beliefs, shape your beliefs. Do you see that in the same way you are the one shaping your beliefs, that no one else can shape your belief?
Yes.
Just like I can manipulate other people's opinions about you, and those opinions then become their basis for making the decision to be friends or to not be friends with you anymore. Other people's opinions are not the truth. The truth is what really happened. Truth is synonymous to reality. And other people, including yourself, including me, do not have perfect insight into truth. And so a person is so-called worthy of friendship when a person is honest, kind, fair, loving, a just person. That's what makes someone worthy of friendship. Is that correct or incorrect in your opinion?
It's correct, sir, what you said.
Okay, so if that's correct, but we've also proven that kind people can be made to look unkind, honest people can be made to look dishonest, just people can be made to look unjust, and that loving people can be made to look as hateful people. Do you now see that the opinions of other people have nothing to do with reality itself, with truth itself? Or do you still believe that what other people think of you is the truth? Otherwise, they wouldn't think it.
No, I see. Thank you.
So then, when are you going to stop caring about other people's opinions, which are based on illusion in the worst case, and then imperfect insight into truth at best?
Very liberating.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
That's very liberating, what you said, and how you think it's liberating.
Yeah, but do you also see that it's not liberating because I said it or because of the way I said it, but because it's simply based on truth, because I showed you what truth is, like with the trash example, right? I was able to show you, just as an example, that just because reality always knows what's real. Truth always knows what's real. Even if no one else has seen me put the trash there, it is truth that I put it there. That's not going to change, no matter who or how many people think otherwise. That's not going to change. So why not give yourself to truth? Why not make yourself kind, honest, loving, just, fair, and not care what other people think, if other people perceive that truth or do not perceive that truth, and based on that, want to or do not want to be friends with you? Why not give yourself to truth instead of other people's so-called truths?
Thank you.
I think I didn't hear most of your response. So why not give yourself to truth?
I said I will. I will.
But why haven't you? Why haven't you so far?
I don't know.
I mean, that in itself is an important realization, right? You can't change. You can't align yourself with truth if you don't even know why you're doing the things that you're doing, right? And so
Yes. That's
another way of defining the work of life, of making sure that you know what you're doing and why you're doing it. It sounds simple, right? But it's so important. Make sure that you know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And lastly, I want to tell you this about that. I mean, we can talk about other things, and I'll ask you if you have any other questions or anything you would like to talk about. But about this, I will tell you this. There is no such thing as my truth and your truth. It's an illusion. And it's a made-up concept that has been used to oppress people. Because as I hope to have shown in my imperfect ways of communicating, that there is such a thing as reality, and then the only other thing other than reality are opinions. There is no reality one, reality two. There is one reality, and everything else is opinion. And so if you know reality, if you say, I know I've seen this stray animal on the street. I know I've taken it in. I know I fed it. I know I gave it a new home. Who else needs to know? I know that I love the creatures in this world, human or not. I know that I do everything I can that justice tells me to do, that honesty, that truth, that reality, that goodness, beauty tells me to do. I do everything because that is up to me. or at least to have the intention to do it. That's up to me. I've had the intention. I did it. But no one saw it. Does that change a single thing about reality? Does that change a single thing about me or about what actually happened? It does not. So why even bother thinking about such a thing as my truth, your truth, this other person's truth, this country's truth, this time's truth? There's no such thing. There's one truth. And truth is synonymous to reality. There aren't multiple versions of reality. Everything that has happened so far in this kinship meeting, for example, there's only one version of that. When the recording comes out, there will only be one recording of the one thing that happened. There will not be another recording of the second, third, fourth version of what happened in the same exact time span with the same people in alternate universes. It's not going to happen. There's one reality. And reality is synonymous with truth. Everything that happens is truth because it happens. If it wasn't truth, it wouldn't happen. If it wasn't reality, it wouldn't be truth. So there's one truth, one reality. And we have the choice to be aligned with reality to the best of our abilities, or to not be aligned with reality to the best of our abilities. That's the only choice. But it changes nothing about reality. You are who you are, and no one's opinions change that fact, for better or for worse. You cannot go and find someone, as almost everyone in this world tries, to find someone who tells them that they're great people, who tells them that they're complete, who tells them that they're honest, amazing, lovable, worthy of friendship, worthy of love kind of people, and that's what makes it so. If anyone who tells you that you are unworthy of love is just as much a person who is to be avoided as someone who tells you that you are worthy of love. Because that's judgment. Anyone who judges another person is wrong. Because only God can judge you. Only reality, only truth can judge you. Reality has one single judgment. It says, this happened. This happened. Not these four things among which you can choose happened. This happened. And anyone who says, yes, this happened, is only reiterating the fact. Them saying it does not make it so. And certainly them saying this did not happen, this other thing happened, does not make it so. It just means that they're delusional. Only truth can judge you. If you are a kind person, which is entirely in your control to be, entirely in your control to be, then you are a kind person, period. No matter who says what. No matter who says what, there might even be people who say that you're 10 times kinder than you actually are. It doesn't change the fact that you are just as kind as you truly are. Anyone who is a friend to you and due to whom you believe that you are worthy of friendship. In other words, anyone who you in your mind would lose and thereby would lose self-worth is in fact your enemy, not your friend. A true friend would never, ever want you to feel more than what you are or less than what you are due to your association with them. A true friend would never want you to be under the illusion that you are something other than what you are. Only enemies want that. Only an enemy wants you to think that you are weaker than you are. Or, sometimes for tactical purposes, an enemy will want you to think that you are stronger than you are. Either way, only an enemy would want you to think that you are something other than what you truly are. And the one judge of that is truth. And you can call that God, you can call that the universe. Either way, it's synonymous with truth. Anyone who makes judgments about truth is your enemy. And it's wrong of you to have enemies, by the way. Don't think anyone is your enemy. I only use that word in the traditional sense because people believe in enemies. There is no such thing as an enemy, but people believe in it, so I'm just using common language. But in truth, there are no enemies, of course. There are people who have ill intentions. So an enemy in that sense. So anyone who wants you to think that you are something other than what you truly are, and what you truly are is fully in your control, in that sense, they are your enemy. And it's wrong of you to seek their approval. It's wrong of you to seek anyone's approval. Because you already have the approval of truth or the disapproval. But again, no human can change that. Only you can change that. Look for the approval of truth, not of human beings. Does that make sense?
So much sense. Thank you. Thank you for so much clarity and time and energy in your answer. Thank you so much. Thank you, really.
Well, thank you for articulating so many of the things that we all deal with in life, because there's not a single human being who has not or is not currently thinking that other people's judgment of them affects them in any way. Everyone thinks that what others think of us makes us better, makes us worse, makes us more worthy, less worthy. And it's false. It's an illusion. It's not real. And so we need to come out of that. And do you have an answer for the question of the week? What do you think? Do you have problems?
No, I understand that it's just the ego that has problems, but that the awareness and the what we are, our essence, doesn't have. It's always present and always agree with, it always agrees with reality, so it has no
problem. Right. And do you see how it is a problem to think that you are worth less or more depending on someone else's opinion?
I can see how it creates problems.
Yeah, but other people's opinions are based on illusion. And so us basing our own self-worth on other people's opinions, which are based on illusion, is an illusion and creates a problem. And that problem is an illusion. And so this is your particular illusion, right? Everyone's dealing with different things. And like I said, many of us are dealing with exactly what you have described here. But this is the tricks that sort of the devil employs, right? The devil employs different tricks for different people because different things work with different people. And so this is what the devil has noticed works with you, that you think that there is more than one truth. And so he's using that. He's using that illusion of yours against you and making you believe that other people's truths somehow reflect on you, that what others think reflect on you and is actually real. They're not. They're not. Okay, so
thank you so much.
Yeah, and again, thank you for bringing that to our attention. I think we all need to think about that. We all need to refresh our minds and remind ourselves that opinions are based on illusions. And to value anyone's opinion, whether these are our parents, our children, our so-called friends, work associates, to value anyone else's opinions, their illusions, is wrong. And so that's what we need to remember. So, but I thank you very much for coming here and sharing that with us, because you could have just kept it to yourself. And so neither I nor anyone else here, including yourself, hopefully, would have benefited from it otherwise. And so this is exactly why philosophy is discourse. Philosophy is having a conversation. And as excellent and amazing it is to listen to other people's conversations, and as edifying as that can be, with certain things, it needs to be us. It needs to be us in that conversation. We can't just listen to other people's conversations, right? So I encourage you to do that more in the future, not only with me here or with others here, but in your life generally, to do this. And fear is an illusion. If you are afraid of so-called losing someone, even that word is wrong. If you're afraid of someone deciding not to be your so-called friend anymore, please know that you have work to do on yourself. And please know that you can do it, and that it's fully in your control to rid yourself of any so-called problem that you could ever have. Not only the ones that you had or currently have, but any problem that you could ever have, it is entirely in your control to rid yourself of it. Okay? So thank you once again. I really appreciate you coming here today. And I hope to see you around more. I'll move you back to the audience just for time purposes. But thank you so much. And like I said, I encourage you to speak up more often. But no expectations whatsoever. As you know, as I always say, there are no requirements, no obligations. Other people, just like they don't get to have opinions about truth, they don't get to require anything of us either. Because requiring anything of someone else is to require something from truth, from reality. And truth and reality know better than us. They're not going to take requests. Okay. And so Blue Screen is saying that they have something relevant to share concerning this. So I will send you an invite.
Hey there.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. Nice to see you again. I think we have spoken in like February,
It's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. And I'm also a bit nervous, which is quite a human emotion. You know, nobody is perfect, and we all have to reflect on ourselves and really, you know, look reality into its eyes. You know?
True.
Yeah, I have been away from the community for a while because my life has been extremely busy. New apartment, new job, new life. It was also my birthday on the 10th of December. And what always motivates me to reflect on my life is yearly my birthday. I do it daily. But also where I reflect on big changes on my life is always on my birthday or New Year's time. And so I had a relevant story. This is pure coincidence. I'm just working on my computer. I saw that she went live, and so I decided to join the kinship session. Just pure coincidence. I was doing some chores. I was I'm clearing my laundry, and I saw the notification. I was like, hey, you know, let's listen into it. Completely spontaneous. And I think one of the most significant things that I have learned this year is detaching myself from identities, from worldly things, from images of self-identity that I have created that may be not rooted in reality or truth. And that in and of itself is a complete waste of energy, in my opinion. You can clear such a huge amount of energy in your life by just detaching and being clear about your own self, what do you call them? Self attributes that aren't placed in like any worldly things, but in attributes about your own qualities. So for example, it doesn't make any sense to tie yourself to people, to things that are temporary, because quite literally almost anything in life is temporary, except yourself, except your soul, except of the universe or God or whatever you try to associate with the truth. It's attributes like, for example, being a kind person, being a strong person, being a loving person. And the more you explore these attributes about yourself and live your life in a way that reassures you that you are a kind person, and reflect on that daily or weekly if you can, whatever fits your schedule, you build an incredible armor with this. You become quite literally an unshakable person. I'm not saying to become a robot and not feel your emotions at all, because you can also identify yourself with being an emotional person, which also has its positive attributes, right? But it's not about actively destroying yourself, starting to put yourself down because a person decided to leave your life, because it's a matter of fact that any person is able to leave your life like that. Just like that. And I'm a person who learns with examples. I had multiple friendships, a job even, that I have been working for years. People that suddenly just decided to move away, for example, which I thought that they would stay for the rest of my life. And if I would have connected my own self-worth to those people, then I would have just actively destroyed myself. And that's just not, that's like the weakest armor you can have in life. You can think of it as in a video game, for example. It's not a sustainable strategy, in my opinion, at least. And that's one of the things that I have learned. I've had a friendship that lasted for almost 7 years, and this year they suddenly decided to go into a different direction. And just be aware of my wording. I'm not calling it, oh, they left my life. I'm not calling it, oh, they abandoned me. You know, I'm not calling it they hate me. That's because they left. They hate me. That's just not a sustainable way of thinking about certain problems in your life. And that ties perfectly into the question of the week, which was, do you have any problems in life? And the hard answer is no. Like, it, anything that you make a problem is truly an issue of definition, purely definition. I work in IT, and so we categorize certain incidents. We start by calling them incidents. We don't put them in a positive way. We don't put them in a negative life. We take our time to evaluate certain incidents and then categorize them. And you can do the same thing with your life, basically. It's way easier said than done, especially if you're a sensitive person. It can be quite the challenge. It can take a lot of energy. But the more efficient you design your strategizing about certain situations in life, and the more loving you are towards yourself, the more you will understand most of the time it's something about your perspective towards life. So that's the personal story that I've wanted to tell. And also, like a certain anecdote that I would like to share is that, you know how when you're in a plane, you come across turbulence. And before a pilot starts their journey, they carefully plan their journey to avoid turbulence and actively design their route in a way of least resistance for the plane. So the plane can save fuel. So the plane can bring its passengers safely to the next destination, and for the plane to return safely. Try to plan your life in a way of least resistance, where you experience the least turbulence in your life. And if you come across turbulence, you're already prepared for that turbulence. You know you have enough fuel for your journey. You know you're not, you don't have a super heavy plane. You know how to deal with certain turbulences because you went to flight school and you learn how to pilot the plane yourself. And that's how you can, you know, detach from anything else in life. yeah, that was my monologue about this topic, and I would also ask you a question.
Yes.
And if it's too personal, you have to answer it. That's completely fine. And my question is, wait, I have noted it here. Yeah. What was the hardest thing you had to detach yourself from to become a better person? That is not connected to the success of your YouTube channel, just in general in life as a person.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that monologue, as you called it. It was very valuable, and you're absolutely right. And I actually talked about that before, how people are so competent and so logical and reasonable at their jobs when they encounter a so-called problem. But then that exact same person, when they leave the job and they come home and they deal with some personal issue, all of a sudden, all the emotions are in and the reasons out the window. And it's so funny. All they really have to do is apply the same exact technique that they already do at work, and which makes them so competent and so good at their job, right? And so sought after. But for some reason, for themselves, for the much more important things than career, than work, They let themselves manipulated by illusions, delusions, identities, so-called problems, emotions, right? And so it's such good advice because most people have work. Most people have a job, right? And they go there and they encounter challenges and issues. And they would not have that job if they were emotional about it every time, or if they would break out in tears every time and not be able to do their job. They would either be fired or they would quit themselves. And so it's really good advice to just tell people, approach everything in life the same exact way as you do professionally, with reason, with logic, with preparation, with understanding, with insight, right? You're absolutely right. And as to your question, I'm trying to think what I had to let go instead of in terms of attachments. I have to say, there comes a point when you do that, when you just know of attachments, of identity, and you let go of them, there comes a point where you don't even think about it anymore. So that's why I'm struggling right now with a specific example. I liken that to people who used to, for example, drink, like who used to be alcoholics, and then they give up drinking, and they certainly count the first week and the first 30 days and the first year, right, of being sober. But after some time, you ask them, you know, how long has it been? They say, oh, I don't even know, over 10 years. You know, they're not counting anymore. So it feels similar to that. It feels like I was hooked on something for so long, the identities, right, as we all are. And but it's been a while. And this is not to say that there isn't much, much more work to do and much, much more to let go of. But I think it was an identity itself to be someone who lets go of identities, who is good at detaching. That can be an identity itself, right? And I think I've let go of at least that one particular identity so that I don't even count anymore. I just go throughout my life. And whenever, I mean, I talked about this before, and this is what I always say, and this is what I always notice, is I know for a fact that if I get angry about something, that I have work to do, that I am wrong about it, right? And so I go throughout my day, and when something offends me, when something makes me angry or resentful, or I say, this shouldn't be like this, or I want to tell someone how wrong they are, then I know for a fact that whatever else is going on, at the very least, there is a me problem there, right?
I'm just laughing because I'm thinking, some personal situations that happen.
Yeah, it happens all the time. That's the point. Everyone has anger and no one knows how to get rid of it. And we have these stupid justifications to keep it around still, but they're really illusions. They don't mean anything. And so I think that might have been the biggest challenge for me to let go of, was the challenge to have to be right, you know? It was a personal offense to me when I was wrong about something, like something factual, right? Let's say we're debating.
You're an insufferable person then.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. Everyone with identity is, right? And so I think that's something to let go of, because you can let go of specific identities, specific roles. Like, oh, let's say you're an architect and you say, oh, I'm a good architect, and you can let go of that. But if you don't let go of the identity of needing to be right all the time, then that's much worse, right? And so that's sort of like a mega identity. And so that might be one thing. Like
in front of headlights, you know,
exactly.
People's nervous systems just get lit on fire when certain identities are questioned.
Yeah. Because imagine you're just sitting at a party, you know, at a dinner party or whatever, and you just overhear a conversation about something that you don't agree with, and you just have to jump in and you have to correct people.
Fired up.
Yeah.
That's like, I really have to watch out for this one, because sometimes
It just feels like a fireball gets lit up inside of my
It's
chest.
terrible. It's
I really,
terrible. And you can't go
I
through
have to
life. I
control
mean,
myself.
yeah, you can be on the bus, right? You can be listening to the radio. You can be just walking on the street and you hear something and you're like, ah, that is so annoying that this person thinks that and says it out loud and I want to correct them.
That's complete bullshit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we have to let go of that. And that is the most, one of the most difficult things. But you know, everyone has their thing that is most difficult. So that's actually even wrong to say. It's just one thing that perhaps I had to deal with, other people have to deal with other things. But it seems to be a common thing, right? Okay, so because of time, I have to thank you very much. We could talk about this for
You're
10
welcome.
hours because it's an excellent topic. But thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you for saying that you had something relevant to what we just talked about with Sue. And I think that closed that whole thing up nicely as well. And yeah, it was great to hear from you again. Thank you for joining.
Thank you very much, too. Have a nice day.
You too. Thank you so much. And I'll move you back to the audience. And thank you again. That was excellent. And I know we have a few more speakers there, but because of time, I want to say I think that we should do that next time. Please put in the people who have their requests out. Please put in your requests first thing in the next meeting so that I can get to you first thing. What I want to do now is just to give you one final thing about the current question of the week. Do you have any problems? I want to point out one more thing about the nature of problems, right? Which are illusions, but about their nature that I didn't point out last week because last week I pointed out something else. And that's the beauty of these questions, technically, that we could just have one question of the week and speak about it forever because it's connected to every other thing, right? But I do want to mention one more thing specifically before we retire this question. And it is this. Notice that every single thing in your life, every single person in your life, you have assigned a role to. Every person that you have in your life, this is my friend. This is my coworker. This is my dentist. This is my so-and-so. Every single person in your life, you assigned a role to. And people can come into your lives and suggest a role. They can suggest to you and say, hey, I can be your this or that. But ultimately, it is you who assigns people roles, whether they suggest it or not. You didn't have to do that. We assign people their roles in our lives. They might agree with them or disagree with them, but in our heads, every single person that we look at and that we keep in our lives has a role assigned to them by us. And every single time they do something that in our minds is not included in that role or that they shouldn't be doing, we get disappointed. And that disappointment becomes a problem. We say, well, this is my girlfriend, this is my boyfriend, this is my friend, this is my brother. And they didn't even show up to my birthday. A girlfriend is supposed to be there for you on important days, on bad days. They're supposed to support you. Your siblings are there to be there for you. And they didn't even show up to this. Or they knew I was nervous about my doctor's exam, and they didn't even call me to ask how it went. It is us who assign that role to them, and it is our expectation of them. And people are aware of this. And so people who want to please you will make sure that they fulfill the role that you assign to them as best as they can. but all our problems come from the frustration, from the disappointment of the roles that we assigned to others. We did that. So let's ask ourselves this. What if we didn't assign any roles to anyone? What if we just stopped living in that way? What if we just let people be the way they want to be? What if we didn't assign them any roles and make up roles and then try to forcefully hold them to those roles? What if we did something else with our time and our efforts and our expectations and our energy and our thoughts? What if we did something else instead? Whatever you'd like it to be, you can put all that energy that you spend all day servicing your own roles that you think you have in other people's lives and checking up on the roles that you have assigned to people in your life. What if we just took all that time and energy and just lived our lives without owing anyone to any, without owing anything to anyone, and not telling other people that they owe anything to us? Every single frustration, every single disappointment, every single disillusionment, every single betrayal, every single so-called abandonment that we receive in our lives is a result of the frustration, of the disappointment, of the roles that we have assigned to those people. If we had not assigned those roles to them, they could not have failed at them, failed, so to speak. Why do we want anyone to be a certain role? What is wrong with us that we need others to be perfect in some certain role that we, for whatever reason, assigned them? Whom are we serving? Are we serving them by doing that? Not one bit. Are we serving ourselves by doing that? Certainly not. And even if we did, that would be selfish. And is it right to be selfish? Is it right to use someone else for oneself? But I give them a role in return. I am something for them in their life. Yeah, but you only give it in return because you ask for something in return. What if we didn't ask at all? I'll tell you what would happen. We would have no problems. If we did not assign roles to other people, whether they always fulfill them or not, it's always a source of problems. Even if they fulfill them, until they fulfill them, we wonder, are they going to fulfill them? We're anxious. What if they can't, won't, don't fulfill them? What if they fulfill it so many times, but what if they don't fulfill it the next time? What if they don't fulfill it or are not able to fulfill it, are not alive to fulfill it until the rest of my life? All anxiety, all issues, all anger, all disappointment come from problems, and all problems come from assigning roles to the people in our lives. If we stop assigning roles to the people that are in our lives, we will instantly stop having problems. So why not try that? Let's try taking away one role from one person and see what happens. If it doesn't work, you can load 10 more roles on them the week after if that experiment doesn't work. So there's no risk whatsoever. Let's just experiment. Let's take one role away from one person. Let's not expect anything of that person, and let's just have them be. And vice versa. Let's take away one role that we have assumed to have in someone else's life from ourselves, and let's see what happens. Do we really owe anyone anything to anyone? And does anyone really owe anything to us? So this is what I encourage you to do, to look at, to further show yourself that problems are not real, that in fact problems do not exist, that you don't have any problems, and no one that you know has any problems. To further show you this, demonstrate you this, make an experiment in your life. Take the roles away. See what happens. You'll be fine. You'll be better than before. And your loved ones, so-called, if you truly love them, they will be better.